And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Usually on Thursdays, we invite our good buddy Jay Wynn Russick to come and give our theater reviews. Yesterday, we decided to spend the entire hour talking about education and the crisis of the boilers and heating situation at the Baltimore City Schools. So we are inviting Judy here on a Friday. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks, Tom.
TGIF. And we are going to talk about Inherit the Wind. That's the new show at Vagabond Players. So refresh my memory, Judy. Is this the thing about the scope? Monkey trial? Is that what you... I think
yes.
You told me this a week
yes.
or so ago.
Yes.
That's the only
it
reason
is.
I know that.
It is. It's based on that 1925 trial in which a school teacher in a small town in Tennessee was put on trial for teaching evolution, teaching Darwin's evolution. I think I first read this play in school, but it's been made into several movies. The most famous, the first, 1960, Spencer Tracy, Frederick March. There have been at least three TV movies made out of it. The play was written by Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee. I don't think he was any relation to the Confederate general. In the introduction to their script, Lawrence and Lee emphasize that this play is not journalism, it's theater. So, for example, they've changed all the names. The great trial lawyer Clarence Darrow, who represented the teacher, is called Henry Drummond. William Jennings Bryant, the famed orator and politician who joined the prosecution, is called Matthew Harrison Brady. The town is called Hillsboro. The teacher is called Bert Cates instead of John Scopes. You mentioned last week how much you admire the title. The title shows up twice in the play. It's first spoken by Brady and then by Drummond. It's a biblical quotation from Book of Proverbs, actually. He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind. And the rest of that quote is, and the fool shall be servant to the wise in heart, which is what happens to the close-minded folks in this play.
Yeah, I just think it sounds like a great grand title.
It is, for a great grand
play. What are you
doing?
I'm playing the lead and Inherit the Wind. I mean, it just sounds like it needs to be uttered with an English accent. So we talked about this a little bit last week when you sort of teased this for us, and you mentioned there's a Baltimore connection. What's that?
There's a big Baltimore connection. H.L. Mencken covered this trial Baltimore's Evening
of
Sun.
Of course, right.
Exactly. And he coined the terms monkey trial and Bible Belt as part of his coverage. He's an important character in the play. Of course, he's not called Mencken. He's called E.K. Hornbeck. He's kind of our guide into the action. He's cynical. He's a smart talker. At the Vagabonds, he's being played by David Shoemaker, who plays him as a very soft-spoken, maybe a little too soft-spoken journalist with a very kind of slow pace. But his performance sticks with you. I brought a sample that mentions Baltimore. So this is David Schumacher as Hornbeck talking to Lenore Blake, who plays the local preacher's daughter.
There's a newspaper here I'd like to have you see. It just arrived from that wicked modern Sodom and Gomorrah, Baltimore. You should read it. My typewriter's been singing a sweet, sad song about the Hillsboro heretic, B. Cates, boy Socrates, Latter-day Dreyfus, Romeo with a biology book. I may be rancid butter, but I'm on your side of the bread.
This sounds as if you're a friend of Bert's.
As much as a critic can be a friend to anyone.
Oh, no, that sounds like a line I should steal when, you know, the next time Linnell and I are arguing. You know, I may be rancid butter, but I'm on your side of the bread. I like that. I'm going to use that.
And
be prepared,
this,
honey.
This critic is a friend to you and to the theater. So.
That's David Shoemaker and Lenore Blake in the Vagabond Players production of Inherit the Wind. I can't say it any other way. Now, by the way, courtroom dramas are always powerful stuff. I mean, I think to those Perry Mason episodes where the last 5 minutes Perry Mason would say, isn't it a fact? And then they would break down and confess. It happened every week. It was fun. But what about this production? Is it powerful?
Well, courtroom dramas actually on stage are kind of a subgenre unto themselves. And trials, as you point out, tend to be really dramatic by nature. I mean, all the way from Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice to 12 Angry Men to those TV shows. They have built-in protagonists. Trials have two attorneys and a defendant, although Inherit the Wind has the school teacher in a much smaller role. They have a built-in chorus or ensemble, the jurors, and they kind of have an onstage director, the judge, and there's lots of conflict. Inherit the Wind is based on a case that pitted two of that era's greatest lawyers against each other. So as drama, it really holds up well. And those two lawyers are very well portrayed at the Vagabonds. Jeff Murray, who was wonderful as Richard Nixon a few years ago in The Vagabond's Frost Nixon, is also quite good as Matthew Harrison Brady, another unfortunate politician, shall we say. Tom Howley, an actor who's new to me, also is quite good as Henry Drummond. Jeff Murray's Brady is just cocksure of himself, and Howley's Drummond is a man who is always thinking. His character is as flexible towards new ideas as Murray's Brady is inflexible. Drummond insists that this trial is about the right to think, which he is doing, and you can see him doing all the way through. But the climactic scene between them somehow isn't as much as a showdown of a showdown as it should be. I brought a clip from one of their earlier courtroom confrontations.
I want a fair trial.
So do I.
Unless the state of mind of the members of the jury conforms to the laws and patterns of society...
Conforms? What do you want to do, run the jury through a meat grinder so they all come out the same?
Oh, I've seen what you can do to a jury. Twist and tangle them. Nobody's forgotten the Endicott publishing case when you made the jury believe that the obscenity was in their minds, not on the printed page. It was immoral what you did to that jury, tricking them. You think you can get away with that here?
All I want is to prevent the clock stoppers from dumping a load of medieval nonsense into the United States Constitution.
That's Jeff Murray and Tom Howley. The show is called Inherit the Wind. It's at the Vagabond Players here in Baltimore. So, Judy, how would you say, I mean, how effective is this production at Vagabonds in terms of, you know, creating the feel of that small southern town, you know, 1920s, that can get tricky to do on a stage set.
Well, and it takes a lot of people to create the feel of a small town. This show has a very large cast. There are almost two dozen people on stage. The Vagabonds, of course, small community theater, small stage. Director Sherrion Brown also uses the aisles, and part of the play is about the way this trial turned the town into kind of a circus, and Sherrion Brown gives a very good sense of that, and also a good sense of how quickly a crowd can turn, in this case, away from the man who was their hero, Matthew Brady. I want to mention some really nice supporting performances as well. Janice Whelan as Brady's devoted, loyal wife. There's a 14-year-old actor named Sam Dye, who is very assured as a student who becomes a witness in the trial.
Good, 14.
Yep.
On his way. Yeah, that's great. So, you know, you mentioned this is about the Scopes Monkey Trial in the 1920s. It's virtually 100 years later. I mean, how relevant is this play, Inherit the Wind, to what we're talking about in the public square today?
Well, interestingly, the playwrights Lawrence and Lee asked that the time period be identified as not too long ago. And boy, is that all too true. I mean, this play feels way too timely. When it debuted,
So they're not insisting that we think of this as the 1920s.
Though it looks like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Exactly. But in terms of the issues and the themes, no, not at all. When it came out, it was seen as a response to McCarthyism and Joseph McCarthy's witch hunts and blacklists. Tom, you know, there are continuing movements to allow creationism to be taught in the schools and even to replace teaching of evolution in some cases. The rejection of science in the play comes strikingly close to the rejection of climate change and science by some members of the right wing right now. Even the battle between fundamentalism and free thought is something that very, very much still rages. So, unfortunately, the more you think about the modern parallels, the more you come up with. The Vagabonds production itself doesn't feel particularly fresh or new, but these themes are so distressingly relevant that definitely holds your interest.
And that's the purpose of theater, isn't it? To provoke a consideration, a rumination on, you know, these themes which are clearly timeless. I mean, they were important, you know, back in the Scopes trial in the 20s, and they remain important today. And that kind of our understanding of science and the importance of data and the use of data, because now there's so much data, people are just throwing it around. You could find a report or a study to justify almost any position. So it really, I mean, the theater at its best is the thing that makes us think, okay, we got to consider this, don't we?
Well, that's definitely one of the tests of great theater, that it remains timely and it remains relevant, and a production that makes you think up those things, that stirs up those thoughts and those arguments when you're on your way home, does what it's supposed to do.
All right. Well, I appreciate your coming by on a different day than usual, but we will see you definitely next Thursday. What are we going to talk about Thursday?
Next Thursday, we're going to talk about four short plays under the single title Love is a Blue Tick Hound. It's being produced by Rapid Lemon Productions, one of Baltimore's newer companies. It's at the Theater Project, and it's part of the Women's Voices Theater Festival.
So. Oh, yeah, that's a cool thing. And that happens here in Baltimore. It also happens in Washington
yes.
and some other places, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so is the Women's Voices Festival in D.C. sort of transplanting itself to Baltimore, or is this a separate one? Do you know?
No, I think this is part of the Washington Festival.
Great.
It sort of reaches out a little farther.
It's branching out a little bit.
Exactly.
That's terrific. Okay. Well, thank you, Judy, and I'll see you next week and look forward to talking about Love is a Blue Tick Hound. That's another good title.
Oh, yeah.
You're coming up
I want to hear what you're going to do with that one, Tom.
Yeah, right. All right. So Inherit the Wind, that's what we've been talking about today. That's at Vagabond Players in Baltimore until the 4th of February. And we've got a link to details about show times and all that stuff at WIPR.org/midday. Lunch today was kindly provided by Marie-Louise Bistro. They're located on Charles Street in Mount Vernon. They specialize in a blend of French, Italian, and Mediterranean cuisines. They're open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, or dinner with brunch on Saturday and Sunday. They've got menu and reservations at marieLouiseBistroCatering.com. That'll do it for us today. Coming up Monday, we celebrate the Martin Luther King holiday with a conversation about Dr. King's legacy with the Pulitzer Prize-winning historian Taylor Branch, former Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee field secretary and author Charles Cobb Jr., and Nelson Mauldin. He's a great guy. We had him on the show a year or so ago. I'm really looking forward to seeing him again. He was Dr. King's barber back in the day. So that's coming up Monday, Martin Luther King Day, right here on Midday. Midday's director and engineers are Luke Spicknall and Katie Marquette. Rob Sivek, Kathleen Cahill, and Sienna Greaves produced the program. Jamila Krempel is WIPR's digital producer. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. Before we go today, we say goodbye to Bridget Armstrong, who has been a producer on our team for the last year and a half. Bridget will be moving to Vox in Washington, and we know better than most how lucky they are to have her. We will miss her, and we will look forward to hearing about all the great things that are ahead for her as her career unfolds. Have a great day.